Radio Prague News.
The former head of the Czech Academy of Sciences, Jiří Drahoš, has officially filed his bid to run in the presidential election. Former Social Democrat Governor Michal Hašek has warned his party may not have it easy in the opposition. And Prague Castle has opened its renovated state rooms to members of the public. Jiří Drahoš, the former head of the Czech Academy of Sciences, has officially filed his candidacy with the Interior Ministry to run in the presidential election in January 2018, with the deadline of November the 7th looming. The presidential hopeful gathered more than 142,000 signatures for his bid. That's considerably more than the 50,000 needed. The candidate said the total was even higher, but that some 15,000 signatures were disqualified for irregularities. Mr. Drahoš told journalists on the occasion that he wanted to serve his country and fight not only for the Czech Republic, but also for, quote, a better and safer Europe. Former MP, former party deputy leader, and former Social Democrat Governor Michal Hašek has said he will not run for the party leadership when the Social Democrats hold their convention. The politician left the top brass of the party 4 years ago following a power struggle among leading members. Then, the Social Democrats narrowly won the election, but slipped to sixth spot this year with its poorest results since the 1990s. The party is considering going into the opposition, but Hašek warned the move could be, quote, a nail in the coffin. Since the Social Democrats would not be the strongest opposition party, he said it was questionable they would still be able to attract enough attention. At the same time, Mr. Hašek said he did not want to imply that the party should enter at all costs a coalition with this year's winner, ANO. More than 80 Roma students at high schools and vocational schools officially received stipends on Friday from the NGO Romea. Recipients are students whose study is threatened by poor domestic or financial conditions. The stipend system covering high school and vocational schools is in its secondary year. It was founded by the NGO after repeated requests from parents in the Roma community. Stipends for high school students are 14,000 crowns per year, while 21,000 crowns go to vocational students. The NGO had already run a program helping students at the university level. The billionaire Daniel Křetínský EPH company is aiming to buy the Plzeň-based firm Škoda Transportation, according to the daily Mladá fronta Dnes and the weekly Euro. The price of the alleged transaction has been estimated at worth more than 10 billion crowns, that's some 390 million euros. According to a shareholder quoted, the deal could be completed before the end of the year. With more than 5,000 employees, Škoda Transportation is the largest mechanical engineering company in Central and Eastern Europe. Prague Castle has opened its doors to the public to see state rooms which are renovated over the course of the summer. The public will be able to visit this Friday and Saturday, that is November the 3rd and 4th. Visitors will be able to see various rooms used to receive official guests as well as smaller salons. Among the sites highlighted are a famous staircase from Matthias Gate, the cloakroom, the throne room, and the Brozík drawing room, all located at Prague Castle's southern wing. I'm Jan Wellinger. You'll find more news at radio.cz.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, a new exhibition looks at how T.G. Masaryk and his son Jan Masaryk contributed to the creation of the State of Israel. Milan Kundera's Book of Laughter and Forgetting has been published in the Czech Republic for the first time. And we meet Czech magician Ondřej Pšenička, who wowed Las Vegas and fooled the famous Penn and Teller. All that's coming up in today's program. The Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek and the Israeli Ambassador to the Czech Republic, David Meron, have just opened an exhibition highlighting the contribution of Czechoslovakia's first president, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, and his son Jan, who later became Foreign Minister, to the creation of the State of Israel. Daniela Lazareva spoke with Ambassador Meron during Thursday's exhibition launch at Prague's Černín Palace, and she first asked him how the idea for the exhibition had arose.
Well, 90 years ago, first president of the Czechoslovakia, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, visited the Holy Land. And we came upon the photographs from that visit, beautiful photographs from 90 years ago. And we decided to make use of these photos. And we made contact with the foreign ministry that were delighted to host us in this work, and together we put together an exhibition telling the story of his visit and also of the continued support of Czechoslovakia through his son Jan Masaryk for the idea that there should be a Jewish state in the land of Israel.
Both Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, Czechoslovakia's first president, and his son Jan Masaryk, who was later foreign minister, had a vested interest in Jewish issues. To what extent or how important was the role of Czech diplomacy for the establishment of the State of Israel?
I would say it was very important. Both the president, President Masaryk, was a big supporter of the Zionist idea of the Balfour Declaration. And today we're celebrating 100 years for the Balfour Declaration, which was a British statement, British letter, saying that the Jews should have their own way to identify as a state in the land of Israel. And later on, the assistance of Jan Masaryk and foreign policy, the Czech foreign policy and diplomacy was very important, working at the United Nations and showing support for this idea, and also leading one of the important UN committees dealing with the future of the land.
Is this a traveling exhibition?
Yes, it will be traveling. We hope it will be displayed in Prague after the foreign ministry and other institutions here, and we already have a lot of interest around the country to present this exhibition in Brno, Plzeň, and other places. So I hope that the Czech public will be exposed to this very interesting story.
Finally, how would you characterize Czech-Israeli relations today?
Super. Excellent. The Czech Republic is one of our closest allies and friends in Europe and in the world. And the relations are so good in many levels, economic, scientific, and diplomatic also. So this is really a circle that we started, I think I would say, on the independence of Czechoslovakia. They, from the beginning, showed sympathy to what became the State of Israel. And we are here to say thank you to the Czech people.
Israel's ambassador to Prague, David Meron, speaking there to Daniela Lazareva. The Book of Laughter and Forgetting by the Czech-born writer Milan Kundera has been published for the first time ever in the Czech Republic. It was the author's final novel written in Czech that hadn't been available in his homeland before now. The only edition ever released in Czech previously was in 1981 by the exile publishing house 68 Publishers. Ruth Frankova discussed the novel, which first came out in French in 1979, with the Czech journalist Daniel Konrad.
I would say The Book of Laughter and Forgetting is not a conventional novel. It doesn't have a protagonist or a story in a traditional sense. It does have a number of characters who, even though they never meet, they're preoccupied with similar problems, and Kundera moves them into situations where he uses them to explore similar motives. And one of the major ones is the way a totalitarian regime makes people disappear, and the nature of this specific kind of forgetting. The way the regime can erase a person from a photograph, from collective memory, from really all levels of the society, until there's no trace left and everyone is living in this strange kind of so-called paradise, this totalitarian utopia, where there's no disagreement, there's no dissent, there's no memory. And you could say that some of the characters in the novel are looking for ways to defy this.
Kundera is known for strictly authorizing any new release of his book, and he actually made quite a few amendments to this new edition of the Book of Laughter and Forgetting. What kind of changes are they?
He made a significant number of cuts and changes, but none of them threatened this unity of themes, as he called it. I compared this new Czech version to the original one. The novel lost a few scenes, it lost a few adjectives, but nothing major. Generally, most of the stuff left out mentioned people or events that made sense to everyone in the 1970s or the 1980s, but they're not necessary anymore. You know, you must understand, when Kundera published the book originally, it was the Soviet Union under Brezhnev. It was the Czechoslovak Socialist Republic under a man named Husák. It was China under Mao. But the world changed, and there's different regimes and different actors now. And actually, to a young reader who opens up the Book of Laughter and Forgetting now, as Kundera just released it, it might make even better sense than the original one did.
The Book of Laughter and Forgetting is the last book Kundera wrote in Czech, which hasn't been officially published in the Czech Republic until now. Do you think it is likely that he will break his vow not to translate his later French novels into Czech?
Probably not. It's very difficult to explain to someone who knows Milan Kundera's works in French or English, because there's no problem there. His relationship to Czech readers, on the other hand, is much more difficult. Up until now, Czechs had difficulties in accessing Kundera's novels because the books were never published here. Right now, there's four other novels that he wrote in French that the Czech readers do not know yet. But Milan Kundera is 88 years old, and these novels were written in a different time. You know, they were written at a time when he was already living in France. Kundera has not translated them to Czech, nor has he approved anyone else to do the translation instead. And he's just been saying one thing all along. I don't have the time to translate my newer French novels into Czech. And because Czech is my native language, I would spend so much time revising the translation, it's out of the question. The little time I have left, I want to use it for further writing in French.
Journalist Daniel Conrad, who was speaking there to Ruth Frankova. Now, in the final part of our program today, Jan Velinger meets the magician Andrei Pshenichka, who wowed Las Vegas and fooled the famous Penn and Teller.
Andrei Pshenichka is an award-winning Czech magician who, despite being only 31 years old, has spent almost two decades in the field of magic, coming up with great acts and great tricks. And not long ago, as you heard there, he appeared on Penn and Teller's show called Fool Us, which offers participants a chance to fool that famous duo with a trick of their own design. How did Andrei do? Well, with a little help from actress Allison Hannigan, he succeeded with a card trick using his own brand butterfly cards. And how did he do it? Well, if he didn't tell Penn and Teller, he sure as hay isn't going to tell us. Instead, when we met at Czech Radio, I began by asking him what first attracted him to magic when he was a kid.
I know when I started doing magic, which was when I was 10 years old, but I don't really know what it started, what was the trigger. I believe that I probably saw something on TV. Probably David Copperfield, because that's what was on TV. But I also remember, actually, that's one of my first memories of magic on TV. It was Penn and Teller. It was Penn and Teller doing this weird stunt of a car or a truck going over someone's body. And then they explained how it's done, actually. It was part of their show. I have not seen it since, but I had to be like 9 years old or something.
Mm-hmm. And that was their hook initially, wasn't it? That they kind of showed behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah. And they marketed themselves as the bad boys in magic. And also, for instance, in London, there's the oldest magic club in the world, and they are banned from the magic circle because they expose magic. Even though they do everything great for magic otherwise, the magic circle is a little old school, I'd say, and they just ban them, even though, whatever, they're one of the greatest magicians in the world.
The first time you succeed at anything, there's a kind of thrill the first time you succeed at something. If you experience that, I guess, early on, you thought, wow, this is something really actually interesting.
What I remember is my first three magic tricks, because I started going to this magic club for kids, and we had this little notepad. And I remember the first three magic tricks. And interestingly enough, they were all card tricks. They were quite basic. But still, if I would show you today, you probably wouldn't know how it's done. Because even though they were basic, they were quite good.
Cards, of course, are an important part of a magician's act. But there's always all kinds of tools, and it's become quite popular now. I know there's different clubs for children, as you yourself right. mentioned. But even when you go to the toy stores around the Czech capital, you see now that they're selling kind of magic kits.
Yeah.
I guess at some point, sooner or later, every magician chooses maybe some implement which is dominant. You have an affinity for cards yourself. It seems to me that you have to make a choice at some point.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's better to specialize in something because then you're just better in that one thing. But what's funny about my case is that magicians around the world know me as a card magician, as a card guy. And I'm not. I started on stage doing stage magic, a silent act with music. And it wouldn't be until 5 years in when I started doing close-up magic, the small things, in intimate settings. And cards, I got in cards more when I started studying acting, because then theater consumed my time mostly. I just couldn't do stage magic anymore, because that is something you can't really do all the time. But cards, it's very practical, you know, in school, under the desk, right? So like hiding and practicing. You can practice moves all the time. I have cards in my hands right now.
Are you going to shuffle them for us?
Yes. This is a riffle shuffle. This is how Czechs shuffle cards. So that's the difference between sounds. So here we have Czech shuffle. And here we have something what Europeans call the American shuffle, right?
Right.
Then we have the card spring. And then we have the card drop. And we can leave them there for a minute until I really need to touch them again.
And we're going to talk specifically about your cards a little bit later on in this interview, because they are now quite a strong part of your act. And not only because you use them, but also because you developed this particular line. Right. But we'll get to that in just a moment, so the listeners will have to wait for that. But you said you studied acting. I read that it was at the Lee Strasberg Theater and Film Institute in L.A.,
That's
of
right.
course, Lee Strasberg is known as really the father of method acting.
That's correct. Yep.
What led you to acting? Was it just you branching out? Was it a different goal originally, or was it connected to the magic?
It was totally connected to magic. I wanted to study acting to become a better magician. That was the ultimate goal. I just wanted to be better in magic. And that's also because after many years, I decided to go back to magic. It was after 8 years. 6 years of studying acting, 2 years of practice. And after those 8 years, I decided to go back to magic, because during those 8 years, I had the struggle if I'm an actor or a magician. You know, one would say you can be both, but you can't really be excellent in both. It's really hard. The final decision was, I love acting and I love magic. If I do acting, I can do a lot of acting, but I don't always have to do magic. But if I do magic, I always have to do both, because good magic is not good without good acting.
One of the big successes that you've had is appearing on Penn and Teller's show, which was very recently, a few months ago basically.
That's right.
And that program is called Fool Us, for those who might not be familiar with it. It's in its fourth season. And
they just announced fifth season.
And they just announced a fifth. That must have been very exciting for you. I mean, to get on the show, and how long did it take you to prepare that particular trick?
It was great
to decide?
Funny. Also, most of the magicians, how they get on the show is they think to appear on Fool Us, it's a good publicity. So you want to go there and do something. So they think, what could I do? But for me, it was that one day I was practicing my act for the Magic Castle because I wanted to tape it and give it to the entertainment director and get hired. And then one of the effects in that act, which I came up with, I realized that it's perfect for the show, you know, with the headphones and everything. Then it's Penn and Teller sitting in those chairs, and there's Allison who could do it, who could perform it for one of them, which would be Penn, because Teller can't talk, so Penn has to be there. And I could go sit in Penn's chair right next to Teller and just watch her fooling him, possibly, right? So that would be amazing. And that was actually one of my favorite moments in the show, when I go sit next to Teller. And also, it was one of my first thoughts, one of my first images that I saw when I was developing that act for that show.
I can't even say your name, and I
pleasure to meet you. I'm Andre.
I know. Hi.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Thank you for helping. Would you please shuffle the cards?
I'll give a try.
What happens when you don't fool them? Is that just a sinking feeling? And did you worry that perhaps you wouldn't?
Yeah, you know, for some people it doesn't matter, because they already know they're not going to fool them. It's just publicity for them.
Right.
They don't care. I really cared. I really wanted to fool them. I went there to fool them, and there was no way for me that I'm not going to fool them. For me also, their answer, you know, they're coding a lot, right? When they're telling you how it's done. And with me, they also said, it was funny, Penn in the end said, "And we don't think you fooled us. What do you think?" Right? So that was kind of funny. But what they said basically was that I have marked cards, right? Mm-hmm. That's in that explanation was that I have marked cards. But the problem is you can't do what I did with marked cards. He said, "Well, we think that you looked back when Penn was putting the card back." And I said, "No, I looked back when he was already shuffling the cards." And Teller looked at me and did, "Huh," and went back to Penn. And then, because normally they would discuss a lot, but in his earphone, one of the consultants, Johnny Thompson, that is one of the most knowledgeable magicians in the world, he just told them, "Guys, you were fooled."
The winner there gets to open for Penn and Teller.
By the way, there is also that trophy, right?
Yes. Ah.
Wait. There's a picture of that trophy right here.
So this is the actual trophy.
This is the trophy.
And this makes me regret that we're not on television.
And it says,
I fooled Penn and Teller.
It says,
F you. We'll take a picture of that after. There was another aspect that I think you must have found very pleasing, which was that Penn seemed to be very impressed with your deck of cards. He said they were beautiful. This is your design, these cards, aren't they?
Well,
or not?
Not really.
Not
no.
really. Aha. Uh-huh.
I hired a designer, my friend, from Sweden, from Stockholm, who is a magician and a designer at the same time. So I just came up with this special thing that is in those cards.
Yes.
And I explained to him when I was in Stockholm what I have in mind. And I asked him if he would be interested in designing those cards. And then first I thought there were going to be trees. Then I just thought one day of butterflies on a floral pattern. So that's the concept is my idea. But then he took that and the system that I came up with, and he put those together. And
the execution was his, and the fine work, but the idea.
Yeah.
And I understand that these were crowdfunded as well.
It's true.
And that it wasn't so easy to find a manufacturer that could make
cards
slick enough or with the right qualities.
Yeah. I can't really tell you.
You can't tell me what those qualities are.
What the thing is,
mm-hmm.
But there is only one factory in the world that is able to do it, to make it, and that's in Belgium, in Turnhout. It's the Matter Factory of Cardamundi, which is the largest manufacturer of cards and games in the world.
And the butterfly is a pretty good symbol because you have the whole metamorphosis. Penn mentioned that it was like a Rorschach test.
Yeah,
and they do look very fun. So, and are those available commercially since they were crowdfunded? Two people who backed the
Yes, they
project?
Are.
They
but
are
they're all sold out, but yeah, name any card.
Name any card? Well, I'm not going to be very original. I'm going to say the Ace of Spades.
The Ace of Spades is very, very unoriginal. Okay.
Okay, now let me say something else.
All right.
How about the Four of Hearts?
I have a psychic connection with my cards. The Four of Hearts is right about here. Am I close?
Yeah, you're bang on. Exactly. That's sweet.
Yeah, I just got to a card. It's funny. But what's also interesting, if I spell your name, which is J-A-N, what do we get?
The Ace of Spades. Awesome.
Andrzej Pszeniczka, who was speaking there to my colleague Jan Wellinger. That's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.